I'm very happy to be here with you today. Very happy to hear this wonderful choir singing this morning, a special treat for all of us, I think. I particularly appreciated the anthem from Robert Sutherland, my fellow Jesuit from a few hundred years ago, a wonderful choice for this morning. We gather here on this Feast of Epiphany, a feast that has many resonances, many traditions, many religions connected with it. The 12th day of Christmas, in the Eastern churches, the day we celebrate the baptism of the Lord. But truly for most of us, it is indeed this image of the three kings, the wise men, the Magi, coming to worship the baby. When I was a child growing up in New York City, I remember that we'd always have under the Christmas tree, as New York Catholics did, a little Christmas crib set up. But the three wise men, who were wax figures, would be kept somewhere else in the house. And over the 12 days of Christmas, each day we would move the wise men a little bit closer to the crib, until finally, on January 6th, they would appear there with the baby and Mary and Joseph, the shepherds, the angels, and so on. In some sense, I think we instinctively see, reading Luke and Matthew together, that this is a scene of harmony. So many nativity displays that you see around the city and in various churches have the shepherds, the angels above, and the wise men with or without their camels present on the scene. And it all fits together. It's a very beautiful scene. The light of Christ that has come in Bethlehem, under the star of Bethlehem, the light that has been proclaimed to the shepherds first, now to all people. People come from everywhere, represented by these three strange figures from the East, have come to see and worship the child. And this is all very beautiful. But of course, if we read the text more closely, which of course, being a professor in the divinity school, that's what I do for a living, I suppose. If we read these texts more closely, we realize that there's quite a difference between the account we hear in Luke and in Matthew. And much of what we hear in Luke really sets the scene for Christmas as we usually celebrate it. The peace, the harmony, the beauty, the silent night, the angels, the shepherds. A scene of peace that draws us in, that we too can come and see the child. But if you take Luke out for a moment, put Luke aside, you realize that Matthew is quite different. And on the first level, rather disturbing and indeed confusing. The previous chapter 1 of Matthew's Gospel ends with Joseph trying to figure out what to do. He knows that his wife-to-be is his child, and he knows that he is not the father of the child. And only an intervention by an angel in a dream tells him to take Mary into his house. And then, in an almost offhand manner, Matthew ends the chapter by saying, and the child is born in Bethlehem. No fanfare, no beauty, nothing. And then chapter 2 begins, which we heard this morning. And it begins on kind of an ominous note, because we have in the time of King Herod. And by tradition and by the things we read, we know that Herod was a corrupt king. Herod was a ruthless king. Herod was a king who was in collaboration with the Romans. He was not a friend of his own people. He was there for his own sake and would do anything he could to keep power. I think in some ways, Matthew is reminding us from the start, this was not a beautiful scene in some ideal world, but the real world crashes in. Joseph was uncertain, and now we see this king looming over the scene. And as we know, it gets worse. Herod, when he hears the good news that the child has been born, he is annoyed. All Jerusalem with him is in uproar. And the people are wondering, where is this king? And of course, the instinct that Herod has is, let me find the baby and kill the baby. I don't want any rivals. And I think Matthew kind of throws this in our face and says, Christmas was not an ideal scene in an ideal world, but Christmas was in the real world, where power hates the light, where power hates the truth, and power wants to push it to the side. That's where Christ was born. Or take the Magi, whatever we call them, the three kings, it's an old tradition. The wise men is the one that we often use as a way of talking about these three mysterious figures from the East. But the Magi are something like what we might call astrologers, or readers of the stars. They are magicians in a way. There are these people from the East who come with their own priesthood, their own way of reading nature. And for some reason that is really unfathomable to us, they are interested in learning about this child who has been born in Bethlehem, the future king of Israel. And this is really the beginning of what is a long history all the way down to the present, of Christ meeting people of different cultures, different nations, different traditions, different spiritual practices, different religions. That suddenly these three figures come in. Again, there's no mention of shepherds or angels or anything. These three people come in to meet Jesus. And they come according to their own lights, their own way of reading the stars, their own tradition. And I think Matthew is saying, don't predict who will come to Christ. Don't predict what he's about, and don't predict how they will find their way. Of course, in a sense, they fail, because they come as far as Jerusalem, and then they realize they don't have a clue where the baby actually is. Now, if you've ever been out on a starry night and gazed in a city or town, you can actually still see the stars. You can say, well, the star up there, is that right above this spot or above that spot, or is it 27 miles away? How to read the stars and bring that spirituality, that religion, and reading nature to this place at this time? And like anyone else who lives with their head in the clouds, who lives above and is looking out for something wise and something wonderful, suddenly they realize their feet are on the earth. They've done their long journey, and they have to start asking around, where is the child? And perhaps with their dismay, they are finding that people don't even know about this child. The scribes and the Pharisees, the leaders of the people have the holy books. They know very well that the child should be born in Bethlehem. But as with so many of us so much of the time, these great promises, they will come true, but sometime in the future. We didn't seriously think they would come true here or now. It will be later, some other time. And finally, the word gets around and these three strangers have come, and they're looking to find out where the newborn king is. And Herod calls them in secretly, apparently so that he doesn't want to be embarrassed in public by what they might say. And he sends them on their way saying, you find the child, and then I will come. He lies to them, of course. I want to come and worship. Actually, I will come to kill. And the wise men still have no real clue who the baby is, so they go and they find Bethlehem. And of course, there's no mention in Matthew's gospel of a manger, a crib, a stable. But they have to ask around again, their feet on the ground, their humble humility, being there among the people, saying, is there a newborn child? And of course, there are always newborn children. And finally, they find their way to this particular place. And I think what Matthew does at this point is say, they suddenly realize that they found what they were looking for. They come to this room in a house in a stable, who knows, where they see that the light they have been following from the east, the star is shining over this little house, over this mother and her baby. And as the Greek says, they rejoice with a great joy. They are filled with joy because everything they had been seeking, everything they had been longing for, has finally come true. Their journey has not been in vain. Their asking around has not been useless. But suddenly they have found their way, and they are here. Now this would be a beautiful ending to the text. They could say, enough, we have another inspired Christmas story. But we know when the magic kind of throws it in our face, immediately after this, the dreams start again. The three wise men, three magi, get a message from an angel saying, don't go back to Jerusalem. Don't go back to see Herod. Get out of here as soon as you can. The kind of unromantic leaving for the three wise men, which we'll sing the famous carol in a few minutes. An unwise and unhappy way to go. Get out of town before you get caught. And then the this kind of confusion, this shadowing of dark power, these magi astrologers from the east getting lost, finding their way, and at the end of the scene, they flee and there is violence. And I think in a way Matthew is telling us, be comforted. The world you live in is no worse than this world. And we can look at the world we live in now in 2019 and say, well, we too have corrupt rulers. We too have people who claim the power. We too have rulers who care not for the people under them. You can look at our country, you can look across the globe. Rulers who don't care about their own people. The main thing is the money. The main thing is to hold on to the power. And we have people of all kinds of religions around us and among us today seeking after some kind of light. And it may have been a sense in the earliest Christian church, we are of Jewish origin, we are the Jewish people, we are the children of Abraham and Sarah. And it now appears that we will recognize the light. But then suddenly, astrologers from a foreign country speaking a foreign language, reading the stars in the way that Christians don't, suddenly are the ones who will find the child first. We can be confused by the pluralism around us. We can be confused by the darkness around us and say none of this is possible. And the cynics among us, the cynics in the hearts of each of us, can say, look what happens. There is no true Christmas. There is no romantic scene. It ends up in darkness and violence and people fleeing and children being killed and people hiding out to save their lives. But I think what Matthew is telling us, even with all of that, even if you're not following Luke's account of the gospel, even if you're living in this utterly realistic world of 2019, with the day Christ was born, you can still be like the magi. They saw the star, and they rejoiced with great joy. They went into the house, they found the mother and her child. And they knew, without any sign on the wall, without any big book, this is the child, this is the mother we've been seeking. And they don't just look. They throw themselves down on the ground, they prostrate themselves, they fall flat on the ground and worship this child. Nothing about Herod, nothing about the confusion, nothing about the danger to come prevents them from worshiping at this moment. And then they get their gifts. And for reasons we can never understand, except that it's an echo of Isaiah 60, they get this important baby, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. But they brought these gifts all the way from their homeland and say, this is what we have to give. And I think the point for us in 2019 is that we should not be entirely distracted. We should not be entirely overwhelmed by the cynicism, the darkness, the violence, the hopelessness of the world around us, but to say that in the darkness, we too can rejoice when we see the light. We too can go to the mother and the child. We too, if we dare, can throw ourselves flat and worship the newborn Christ. And then we look and say, well, what is it I have to give? I give the gifts that I have. I give the gifts that I brought. This is what I have for the newborn Christ. I suppose the beautiful final touch, if you leave aside all the violence that follows, is that these three magi, by their own route, again finding their own way, went home by another way to where they had come from. Matthew doesn't demand that they stay in Christ, doesn't demand that they convert and become Jews or later on Christians, doesn't even ask anything more from them, except to say, out of your tradition, out of your background, out of your faith, out of your way of reading the stars, you came, you saw, you rejoiced, you worshipped, you gave your gifts. Now go home. Don't be afraid to go home. Go back where you came from. And I think Matthew has, despite all the things around us reading, an ultimate confidence that if we are seekers, if we follow the stars as we follow the stars, if we find our way to Christ, then don't worry about how to formalize that, how to institutionalize it, how to make it mean this or that. But give your gifts and then return home.